Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi, with the Women's Initiative of the OU. My name is Dina Rabinovich, and I will be learning with you the Mizmorim composed by Asaph. Asaph was the chief composer during the time of David HaMelech and composed a total of 12 Mizmorim. The first was Mizmor Nun. This Mizmor, Mizmor Ayin Dalet, is his third. He will speak for the next 9 Mizmorim as well, concluding with Mizmor Pei Gimel. As we begin Mizmor Ayin Dalet, there is a sense of deja vu. We've heard this before, in the words, in the images, and in the questions being asked. The words like Zanachta, you have abandoned, Cherpa, an insult, Oyev, the enemy. Images like Shilchu va'esh mikdashecha, they set fire to the mikdash, Ye'eshan apecha, your smoldering wrath, Sha'agu tzorerecha bekerev mo'adecha, your adversaries roared in the middle of your meeting place. And finally, in the question that Asaph is asking, why, God, why did you let this happen? These are the words and images and questions that Yirmiyahu asks in Megillat Eicha as he looks upon the burnt ashes of the Beit HaMikdash, as he sees the ruins of Yerushalayim. Usually, we look at a mizmor and ask the following questions. Who is speaking and to whom? What is being said and in what context? But before we get to those questions, we need to pose a larger question, one that we usually associate with Megillat Eicha and Tisha B'Av, one that is relevant here as well. The Rav Yosef Soloveitchik, in The Lord is Righteous in All His Ways, Reflections on the Tisha B'Av Keynote, says, begin quote, on any other day, if, God forbid, disaster strikes, the law said a Jew cannot ask Eicha, why? The very question of Eicha is intolerable. Who am I to ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu to explain anything to me? What do you mean, how or why? Who are you to understand? What allows you to be so bold? This is my will, and that is all. The answer, says the Rav, is the reason behind the question and what we hope to accomplish by asking the question. He continues, Tisha B'Av is not only a day of crying, it is an intelligent crying, an understanding of the catastrophe, and especially the fallout of the catastrophe, end quote. That is what Asaph is doing. He is asking the question why, so that we can understand the loss. For only once we have processed the loss and what caused it, can we begin to remedy the situation. Another question to consider before we look at the words of the Mizmor is the question of timing. We noted that Asaph was one of the chief composers during the time of David HaMelech. How then can he ask questions about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash when the Beit HaMikdash had not even been built? Ibn Ezra, in his introduction to Sefer Tehillim, provides two answers. The first is that Asaph was a Navi, and as prophet, he is foreseeing both the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and the reaction to the destruction. This Mizmor would be said in anticipation of both events. The other option is that there was another Asaph who was exiled to Bavel, and who did indeed witness the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Back to our Mizmor. This Mizmor is a maskil, a Mizmor that teaches so that we need to think about what is it trying to teach us. The Mizmor has three sections. The first section is a lament, a kina, in which Asaph is questioning God, why did you abandon us? What seems to bother Asaph the most are the harsh and degrading words of the enemies and the fact that the enemies are besmirching the name of God. Asaph beseeches God to take the enemies to task for the sake of his name. Maskil le'asaph, lama elokim zanachta lanetzach, why, O God, have you abandoned us forever? Ye'eshan apcha b'tzon maritecha, why are you so angry that you afflict your nation that you tended to like sheep? Zechor adatcha kanita kedem, remember your congregation from years of yore, from Yitzyat Mitzrayim and the Midbar, where you called us your own. Ga'alta shevet nachalatecha, Hartzion ze shachanta bo. Remember the tribe of your estate, of Hartzion, where you rested your divine presence. Harima fe'amecha lemashuot netzach, kol hera oyev bakodesh. Lift your feet quickly to go to the place, to go to the mikdash that was destroyed, to everything that the enemies destroyed there. Sha'agu tzorerecha bekerev mo'adecha. Your enemies roared out in voices of jubilation in your meeting place. Samu ototam otot. They set up their flags as signs of victory. Yevada kemevi lamala bisvach etz kardumot. They acted as one who is chopping down trees with an axe. Va'ata pituchecha yachad Bechasil v'chalifot yahalumun. The gates of Yerushalayim were destroyed by hatchets and other chopping instruments. Shilchu va'esh mikdashecha. They set fire to your sanctuary. La'aretz chilalu mishkan shemecha. They desecrated the mishkan of your name. Ototenu lo ra'inu, our own signs we did not see. In ot navi v'lo yitanu yodea adma. There is no longer a prophet nor any amongst us who knows. Ad matai Elokim yacharef tsar, until when, O God, will the foe be allowed to insult? Yena etz oyev shimcha lanetzach. How long will the enemy debase your name? Note the chutzpah. We complain that there are no prophets to interpret the signs, after years of ignoring the warnings of the prophets that God had sent us. We will discuss and explore further the idea of chutzpah and hypocrisy in the conclusion. In this first section of Lament, the verbs are in the second person. Asaph is speaking directly to God. Why did you let this happen? The second part shifts both in language and in tone. Once again, Asaph is speaking in the second person, speaking directly to God. But this time he is praising God by describing all the victories God has over his enemies, with the enemies forced to acknowledge the greatness of God. There are references to the two greatest acts of God, to Maaseh Bereishit, the 6 days of creation, and to Yitziat Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt. Some of the phrases can be understood as references to both. Atafararta ba'ozcha yam, shibarta rashe taninim al hamayim. You split the sea in pieces with your strength. You shattered the heads of the sea monsters in the waters. The Torah tells us that on the 5th day of creation, Hashem created the taninim, the large sea monsters, showing us that he is stronger than they are. The term tanin is also often used as code to refer to Egypt, with the implication that you, God, were stronger than all the gods of Egypt. In reference to creation, in Mizmor Tzadik Gimel, which we recite on Fridays, the pasuk will state, Mikolot ma'im rabim adirim mishbirei yam, Adir Bamarom Hashem, more than the roars of many waters, mightier than the waves of the sea, you are mighty on high, Hashem. God is mightier than any forces or beings in the sea. And if we want to look at that pasuk in reference to Yitziat Mitzrayim and all of them acknowledging the power of Hashem, we have the following. In Shirat Hayam, we have the Egyptians saying, Mi chamocha ba'elim Hashem. Who is like you amongst all the gods and forces, Hashem? And finally concluding, Hashem imloch leolam va'ed, God will reign forever. To continue with the other praises that Asaph declaims, Atarit satsta rashe leviatan, titnenu ma'achal le'am letziyim. You crushed the head of the leviatan. You gave him as food for the people of the desert. The Leviathan is also used as code for Egypt, and the pasuk can refer to Bnei Israel enjoying the spoils of Egypt, who are compared to the Tanin and the Leviathan. Ata vakata ma'ayan vanachal, ata hovashta naharot etan. You split open springs and streams and separated between water and dry land. You made dry land back into streaming rivers. This can again refer to the splitting of the sea, or to the days of creation when God separated between water and dry land. Lecha yom af lecha laila, ata hachinota ma'or v'shamesh. You created day and you created night. You rule over both of them. Ata hitzavta kol gvulot aretz, kaitz v'choref ata yitzartam. You made the borders of the world between dry land and sea, between land and desert, between mountains and valleys. You created the seasons, summer and winter. The enemies of Bnei Israel, the ones who destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, should not be allowed to bask in their victory and to feel jubilant. The tone of the third section shifts yet again. Asaph is still speaking to God, but this time in commands, in plaintive requests that are contrasting to the complaints or praise of the first two sections. We see language like, Al yashov dach nichlam, don't let the poor man turn back disgraced. Zechor cherpatcha mini navel kol hayom. Remember the insult to you by those who debase you. Al tishkach kol tzorerecha. Don't forget the voices of your foes. And perhaps the most ironic of them all, habet labrit. Remember the covenant, the brit, that you made with us. Why ironic? We, Bnei Israel, were the ones who abandoned the brit. We worshipped idols, and we ignored the warnings of all of the Nevi'im that God sent to help us correct our ways. After many years, God destroyed the temple in anger, and yet we cried to him, "Remember the covenant?" What chutzpah, what hypocrisy. The Midrash Psikta Rabbati notes this chutzpah and fashions a dialogue between David and then Yirmiyahu and finally Asaf. They each complain to God in their own words. Why did you do this to us? How could you? How could you abandon us and let the Mikdash be destroyed? To which God replies, "Really? You're accusing me of abandoning you? But I wasn't the one who abandoned you first. You abandoned me long before I, quote unquote, abandoned you." What does this Midrash mean? According to Rabbi Binyamin Lau, the head of the Ramban Shul in Yerushalayim, the very essence of the irony of the hypocrisy means that all hope is not lost, that there's a chance for reform. The Nevi'im, David and Yirmiyahu and Asaf, are very aware that Bnei Israel are the ones who stopped listening, that they are the ones who closed their ears to the warning and closed their hearts to the possibility of return. But like children who can ultimately rely on the unconditional love of a parent, they know that the parent will never totally close their ears to the cries of the child. As Bnei Israel cry to God, as Asaf says, "Lama zanachta, why have you abandoned us?" What he is saying, and what he is saying on their behalf, is that we still want the relationship. We closed our ears to the words of your Nevi'im. We stopped doing what you ask. It looked like we were abandoning you. But now, really, we don't want to leave you entirely. And as long as Bnei Israel complain, it means that they want the relationship to continue. There is a sliver of hope for the future. There is a connection between Mizmor Ayin Gimel and Mizmor Ayin Dalet. In Mizmor Ayin Gimel, the little Eov, there was a question to God about what is happening to one person. In this Mizmor, the question is the same but directed to the nation. Why are you allowing this catastrophe to happen to your people? We don't understand either one, either why things happen to the individual or why things happen on a communal level. Perhaps we can combine the two conclusions to teach us a lesson. In Mizmor Ayin Gimel, the only answer we have when asking why do bad things happen to good people or good things to bad people is Kirvat Elokim Litov, to get closer to God. For by getting closer to God, we realize that we are not going to understand so much of what he does. And in this Mizmor, when we ask Hashem, "Why have you abandoned us?" we have the message, we have the hope, that as long as we keep communicating, as long as we open up our ears and we open up our hearts, even as we cry in anger and in pain, there is still hope. Thank you for studying together. Li'ilui Nishmat Malka Esther Batzvi Yosef.